Heart of the Matter is brought to you by Dundalk Christian Counselling Centre. This free counselling service is situated at Dundalk Baptist Centre on RTE Terrace. You can contact us in complete confidence on 932 7094 or email us at christiancounselling@aircom.net. You can also visit our website at dundalkbaptistchurch.org/counselling.
Good evening. You are listening to Heart of the Matter on Dundalk FM 97.7, and we are back from what seems like a long hiatus for football.
Yes, we almost had to use Google Maps to find the studio.
That's right. Well, we are live tonight. We are missing one. Kevin is not with us, but that's okay. Stephen is going to be continuing to take us through the Gospel of Luke here. And what are we looking at tonight,
Stephen? We are on the very end of Luke chapter 12, and we're looking at recognizing your spiritual opportunities and then taking your spiritual opportunities.
Very good. So we will get into that. And if you have a Bible and want to follow along, Stephen's going to be going through Luke 12, 54 to 59. But before we get into that, we're going to start with our song by Third Day called King of Glory.
This King of Glory that pursues me with his love and haunts me with each hearing of his softly spoken words. My conscience a reminder of forgiveness that I
King of Glory.
Well, we're in that major section in Luke's Gospel where Jesus is basically making his way towards Jerusalem. And along the way, there's major teaching to his disciples and sometimes directly to those who are listening in the crowds. And that's really where we are tonight. We're at the very end of Luke chapter 12, beginning at verse 54. Then he also said to the multitudes, "Whenever you see a cloud rising out of the west, immediately you say, 'A shower is coming.' And so it is. And when you see the south wind blow, you say, 'There will be hot weather.' And there is. Hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky and of the earth. But how is it you do not discern this time? Yes, and why? Even of yourselves, do you not judge what is right? When you go to your adversary, with your adversary to the magistrate, make every effort along the way to settle with them, lest he drag you to judgment, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and the officer throw you into prison. I tell you, you shall not depart from there until you've paid the very last mite." Now, Jesus had already challenged his disciples to look and be watching for when he returns, and now he turns from them and focuses on the crowds, those who are sort of, if you like, listening. They're not yet disciples, but they're attracted perhaps to what Jesus is saying, and certainly curious. And really he begins to focus them, that being curious and being sort of hangers-on and being close but not close enough isn't good enough. And this section really is a powerful challenge to unbelievers, and really to unbelievers who should know better, to wake up and understand the opportunity that it is given to them while it's still being offered. He starts off in verses 54 to 56 by using an illustration from everyday life, the various signs, atmospheric signs that point us out what the weather's likely to be like. And he uses this as a picture that God has equally given us signs pointing out who Jesus is and therefore how we ought to respond to him. There are at least 44 fulfilled prophecies from the Old Testament, and some Bible scholars suggest that there could be as many as 300 which are completed in the life of Jesus. Circumstances such as where he was born, his human lineage, how he was executed, all things that would have been beyond his human control. And yet there they are, and nobody has ever been able to contradict them. In his book, Science Speaks, the authors Peter Stoner and Robert Newman discussed the statistical improbability of one man, whether accidentally or deliberately, fulfilling just eight of these prophecies. And they say that the chance of it happening accidentally is 1 in 10 to the power of 17. Well, if you're not a mathematical genius, which I'm certainly not, 1 to the power of 17 is a big number. Here's how big it is. If you took euro coins of 10 to the power of 17 and laid them all over Germany, which I guess would be appropriate since the Germans are the backbone of Europe, it would cover all of Germany 2 feet deep in euro coins. Now mark one, just one of those coins that are covering the entire country of Germany 2 feet deep. Stir them all up together all over Germany, blindfold a man, tell him he can travel in any direction he wishes, but he only gets one chance to pick that one coin, that marked coin. What chance would he have of getting it right? You guessed it, 1 in 10 to the power of 17. Just the same chance that the prophets would have of writing these just 8 prophecies. We said there's at least 40 we know that have been fulfilled, but just 8 of them all coming through in one man. So what we're saying is that the evidence that God has given us is overwhelming, even just in our own way of looking at things with statistical probability. But these people here, not only did they know some of these facts, but they had seen Jesus perform miracles before them. They'd seen him cleanse the leper, heal the sick, power over demons, even raising the dead. They had heard the authority which he had spoken. In John's Gospel, they confess no man ever spoke like this man. But later on, it would say in the same Gospel, although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe him. So what was the problem? The problem then And I'd put it to you tonight, the problem now, and maybe the problem with you, is not lack of evidence, but the predisposition of our hearts not to want to believe. Jesus describes them well as hypocrites. We'll maybe tease this out with Michael later on, but I think that the original language has the idea of actors. You know, someone who are pretending to be something that they're not. They're pretense. They're pretending to be willing to be convinced. If only they got another sign or a different sign or something in some different way. But the challenge comes to us too. Are we simply putting on an act? May fool others. Perhaps if it's good enough, we might even fool ourselves. But we see from this that the one person who's not fooled is the one person who's actually important, and that's Jesus himself. Our next song is based on Psalm 34, and it's called Taste and See.
I sought the Lord, and he answered me and delivered me from every fear. Those who look on him are radiant, they'll never be ashamed, they'll never be ashamed. This poor man cried, heard me and saved me from my enemy, the Son of God surrounds his saints. He will deliver them, he will deliver.
Never.
believers with being hypocrites, with those who are putting on an act, because they can very easily tell what the weather is going to be like by just looking at the signs that are around them in the sky and so on. And he says, well, there are also signs around you as to who I am, and yet they're not acting on that. The impending judgment that he is bringing is just as real as the weather that's changing, and yet they're not responding to that. And he goes on to use, if you like, another illustration. And this time it's about somebody who's on their way to court with their adversary. They haven't arrived in court yet. And yet the obvious thing is to settle with their adversary before they go into court. The implication here in the illustration that he gives is that the person knows they're actually in the wrong. So why go to court? Have this judgment made against you. He says, I tell you, you shall not depart unless you've paid the very last mite. And it seems to me that he's using this as an illustration here of people not taking the opportunity that they have in the presence of Jesus to escape from the judgment that they must surely face. Before you enter the court and face the judge, you have a time period, if you like, to solve matters, which you can't solve them once you're in the court and the judge, as it were, finds against you. And this idea of mankind being brought to face judgment, it occurs over and over in the New Testament. For example, when Paul's preaching to the Athenians in Acts 17, he says, because he, that is God, has appointed the day in which he will judge the world in righteousness. Now, there's the problem right there. If he judges it in righteousness, and we're not righteous, then we've already failed, haven't we? By the man, speaking of Jesus, whom he has ordained, he has given assurance of this by raising him from the dead. Again, he's pointing to a sign here, an unmistakable sign. The resurrection of Jesus proves who Jesus is. He is the standard against which we will be judged, but he's also the one, if we have our trust in him, whereby we can escape judgment. And the illustration here that Jesus is using clearly implies that you know that you're in the wrong and the verdict is inevitable. You lose, so why wait until you go into court when it's too late? And again, throughout the Bible, even in the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, it brings us to this cosmic idea of judgment. I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. The books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. The dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the book. So the idea of an inescapable judgment that every human being who's ever lived is called to account. The problem being, of course, as Paul summarizes it in Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So nobody can go with confidence into that court in their own righteousness. And the problem is this: if we face justice in the wrong, on our own account, justice, God's justice, must treat us as we deserve to the full extent of the payment required. And again, in the picture that Jesus uses of the last judgment in Matthew 25, he says, then he will say to those on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And again, in Revelation 20, if anyone is not found written in the book of life, they were cast into the lake of fire. Very sobering pictures of judgment here. But there is really, really good news. Facing that exact same judgment, we can be guaranteed to escape the consequences of our sin. How? Well, stay tuned and we'll come back to you after the ad break.